next.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Rabbi Dovid Teichtel. Welcome, Dovid. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
And we're going to be talking about Jewish meditation traditions and Chabad. Now, Chabad is a strange-sounding word. Tell me what it means.
Chabad is actually, you know, today many people will hear of Chabad as an organization, but originally Chabad was more of a movement and a philosophy. The name Chabad actually is a philosophy, comes from a philosophy perspective. Chabad is three Hebrew words, Chachma, Bina, Dat. It's an acronym of wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. Because many times someone could learn something and understand it and contemplate on it, but you have to bring it down to a practical doing something with it, dot, understanding, knowing.
And what language does it come from?
That comes from the Hebrew language.
Okay. And in English, it's often spelled C-H-A-B-A-D, but the C-H is given the pronunciation from German or Russian.
German or Russian.
Okay.
Chabad actually started in White Russia 250 years ago, at that time was a little town where they moved to. It was called Lubavitch, which Lubavitch is translated, incidentally, was before Chabad moved there. It's translated as City of Love, Lubavitch, City of Love. Hmm. And that's where this movement where people felt of serving God through love, caring for another person, and that was one of the fundamental beliefs and workings of any Chabad person.
Now, for me and other listeners who may not know much about Jewish history, Jewish religious history in recent years, is Chabad where does it come within the branches of Judaism that we might know about, like Reformed or Conservative or Orthodox, or is it something separate?
Today at Chabad, as an organization, we believe a Jew is a Jew is a Jew. We don't believe in the labels. Okay. We believe it's what unites us, not what divides us. And that's why if you go to many of the Chabad centers, Chabad actually today as an organization, we have centers anywhere from Alaska to Zaire, where we try to do programs to help people out, Jewish awareness programs, or we have social programs. We have drug centers in California. Many of our centers though, are focused around holidays, teaching and learning. And these centers, anyone who wants could come in at any time to learn about the heritage and learn about their faith.
Now you're fairly new. The Chabad Center here in Champaign-Urbana at the University of Illinois is fairly new, isn't it? You just came, last summer?
Yeah, August. Okay, short 9 months.
Okay. And so it's fairly new to this tradition. Where is the next closest Chabad Center?
Peoria, Illinois. We opened the center six years ago.
In Chicago?
In Chicago, there are about 18 Chabad centers, Chicago and its suburbs.
Indianapolis?
Indianapolis, we have in Indianapolis, Indiana, and Monster, Indiana.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned that because this program is heard from Chicago and Indianapolis, and so there may be people hearing you who might want to investigate this in their own communities.
We have about 22 centers in this Illinois, Indiana area.
And if someone goes to one of these centers, if they're Jewish, what would they or if they're just curious, what would they discover?
There's a lot to discover. There's the classes which happen. Then there's programming, maybe a social program, maybe a class, maybe a program just to discuss how can we have more awareness about the plight of the Jews in Argentina, or of the people in Argentina, or like every center, every city where Chabad is, when they start off, they might start with less programming, with a class here, a class there, a program here, a program there. But as they grow and they have more people working for them, they can add in their programming. As when Chabad started in California about 40 years ago, they opened a very large drug center. It was the 60s and everyone, you know how it was. And
there were problems.
There were problems. So based on the need, it was for all people, for all, you know, it's about people helping people, whether the person's Jewish or not. They opened the drug center. And Argentina, there was the problem with the finances a few years ago. They opened relief centers.
Oh. Now, you're a rabbi. Tell us what that means.
You know, I like to always say I'm not a pulpit rabbi. We try to be a people's rabbi. As a rabbi, I was ordained as a rabbi. I studied for it many years. I went to Rabbinical College of America in New Jersey. That was my final 2 years of studying to be ordained. But in order to get to those final 2 years of studying, we had 4 years, which I studied in New York and in Israel. And basically, your whole life, you're basically studying towards it. I mean, myself and many of my classmates, even if they would decide to go into business or in law or into medicine, many of us learned to be rabbis because you never know where you might end up one day. Someone has a question. A rabbi doesn't only mean teaching the books. A rabbi goes to mean helping someone else out.
Now, where were you born? Where do you come from?
I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York.
Uh-huh.
Good old Brooklyn. Moving out to a small town like Champaign was actually an experience.
Uh-huh.
But I'm from Brooklyn, and I grew up and studied in Brooklyn. As I mentioned before, I went to Israel.
How long did you study in Israel?
I started in Israel for a year.
1 year. Uh-huh.
Actually, after our undergraduate studies, they sent us abroad, our graduating class of 87 students, to all different places around the world where we could help people out or help existing institutions. As I mentioned previously, Chabad is here to help out through programs. So I spent a year in South Africa, Johannesburg, and in that year I also traveled all around South Africa or other countries, to Zimbabwe, we went to Swaziland to visit the 5 Jews that were there, or to visit the people that were there. We brought programs, you know.
Mm.
So we've been around a bit in these things.
Now, of course, as a rabbi, you read Hebrew, but do you, as I understand it, the Hebrew that's spoken in Israel today is different than biblical
right.
Hebrew?
The Hebrew spoken in Israel today is referred to as modern Hebrew. It's
okay.
A takeoff of biblical Hebrew. Many of the words might be similar, or the root word is very similar. Biblical Hebrew, which we find in the Bible, which is in Hebrew called the Chumash, which are the 5 books of Moses, or in the prophets, and the writings are basically in Hebrew, and the Talmud afterwards was in Aramaic. When the state of Israel was established, they adapted Hebrew as their language.
Mm-hmm. And do you speak modern Hebrew then?
Yes. We study it in school. Growing up, we had to learn Hebrew very well.
All right. What other languages do you speak?
Yiddish. That's the, as they call it, Mamalashen, which is another language that we are taught, which years ago was every Jewish person spoke Yiddish. Mm-hmm. And that's a language that's being forgotten, unfortunately, today. And English, a little Aramaic from learning mm-hmm. the Talmud. I understand a few other languages from my travels, but those mm-hmm. are the 3 main languages.
Now, you have family here with you?
Yes. Chabad centers, when we establish a center, we usually come a young couple. Myself and my wife, I'm actually here with my wife and my young child, which we try to give that home environment feeling. So we always have a couple coming, and we would hire help as the years go on. We always try to give that family environment feeling. So that's the reason when we came out, it's always in a family setting.
Now, the various programs and classes that you offer at the Chabad Center here, how could people contact you to learn more about them?
We actually offer 2 kinds of programming, 2 different crowds. We have our big part of our work is the Chabad Jewish Student Center, which is classes and programs, and we have in the community. We have a website which is chabadcu.org. That's C-H-A-B-A-D. CU as in Champaign, Urbana.org, which there we have a listing of all our programs and a lot more of what we're about and what our organization internationally is about.
And is there a national Chabad website?
The national Chabad website for learning is Chabad.org. That's Chabad.org. And actually, we also have a site if people want to learn news about Chabad internationally. There's a site called Lubavitch.com, which is LubavitchTCH.com.
And of course, since this is a live call-in program, if people have questions today, my name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for the program, but we're eager to have other people ask questions besides myself. You may call us anywhere the program is heard, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL, the call letters of this station. In Champaign-Urbana, we have several local lines you can reach by punching in 333-9455. So we encourage local callers to use that number, 333-WILL, to be on the air talking live with our guest today, Rabbi Dovid Teichtel from the Chabad Center here in Champaign-Urbana. Rabbi, do other Jewish rabbis recognize, are all rabbis sort of the same, or do you have different training if you're in Chabad or if you're in Reformed or if you're in Orthodox?
There is the basic learning of a rabbi who was ordained, went through the years of studying and learned the basic the oral law, the written law, and all the things that come with it.
Mm-hmm.
Within Judaism today, we do have Reform, Conservative, and Orthodoxy, which each one, we all have the basic belief, we're all Jews, and to practice it, just each one has different ways of expressing the way of practicing, and that's how the difference would become, whether Reform or Conservative and Orthodox. But as I mentioned previously, we try to stick to the no-label thing, because it's important. You know, today there are so few Jewish people around, and after all that they went through, it's important for Jewish people and for all people generally to know. It's always important to focus on what unites and not on what divides, and that's where I was actually getting to earlier with Chabad. In our centers, any one of our 3,000 centers you might walk into, you won't find people saying, oh, I'm only Reform, or I'm only Orthodox, I'm only Conservative. You'll find across the board people.
Uh-huh.
You'll have a lot of unaffiliated people coming too.
Now, when the Chabad Student Center came here to Champaign-Urbana, there was already a Hillel Student Center. Tell me the difference.
Right. When we actually were thinking of coming down here in August, there's actually Chabad coming down here for about 17 years now, visiting once a month to give a class at the Hillel Center.
Ah.
I mean, Chabad on campuses are across America, 120 campuses full-time. And there's also Hillel Centers and other campuses. When we originally came down in August, actually, we met with the Hillel, and we spoke about where we could work together, where we'd do programs together. Other places, we're another organization. We try to give the, I can't say what Hillel is, I can tell you what Chabad is. We are here to try to give that home environment feeling. No matter how big a Chabad center might grow down the year, down the lines, we'll always find that the director, the program director, will always try to give that personal touch. We try not to make it by a certain hourly job. We try to give it around the clock. So a student should feel comfortable calling a rabbi at 5 in the afternoon, or 5, if there's an emergency, 5 in the morning. If, oh, rabbi, I have to go to the emergency room, and he shouldn't feel worried. But it is very important to focus that we are here to work with the existing organizations, and it's something we plan to do. Just when you have so many students out there, you have 3,500. There's so much, you know, how many
Jewish students.
There's no way to know for sure how many. Mm-hmm. Roughly, they say 3,500 Jewish students. How many are involved? And it's our job, all of our jobs together, to try to get all of them involved. And some students are involved to one style program, some students are involved to another kind. Some are to none, some are to both. And that's what we do. A lot of our programs that we do, we don't do out of a specific place. We, you know, we do things out of the Greek houses, or we do things out of different dorms, you know, just social parties or events. So if a person doesn't feel comfortable to walk out to something Jewish, doesn't want to come to a Friday night dinner, we'll bring the program to you.
Uh-huh.
We'll have a Hanukkah program with you.
Now, do you have Shabbat services that you lead as a rabbi?
I don't lead services. We don't do Shabbat services. We have Shabbat Friday night dinners open to students. We have 40, 50 students that come by and eat dinner every week, and we try to make them fun and interactive. We actually have once a month a theme Shabbat, which the entire Shabbat will be discussing a different culture.
Hmm. Like what?
Like actually this Shabbat, this Friday evening, we're having an Italian Shabbat, which the food's going to be Italian gourmet, and we're actually going to have some Italian students,
mm-hmm.
students, not Jewish students, who want to come by and tell us a little bit about the Italian heritage and what we could learn, because it's a learning experience. And a lot of times we have non-Jewish students coming by wanting to learn about our programs and learning about Jewish heritage, and they're always welcome.
Hmm. Now, what do other... I'm not sure quite how to ask the question. What do students who've grown up in a Jewish family that has the Jewish heritage, but who may not be observant, who may not be practicing, do you try to reach out to them? Do you try to draw them into your programs, or do you say, well, that's their choice, that's fine?
We're here to give the tools. I know we stand on the quad with the table. Any student, you know, as the famous saying went, or as we adapted it, ask the rabbi 5 cents. We're available, you know, myself and my wife, we have a very big student leadership board, which many of our programs, you know, are for students that are not, who don't think when they walk into the first day of college, they think that I'm not going to do anything with my religion. I want nothing to do with it.
Right.
And a student, we try to make a student feel comfortable knowing by coming to our programs, you're not becoming religious. We're not here to do that. We're here to make you have Jewish pride, be proud of who you are, or learn more about it, or just be comfortable hanging out with other Jewish people. You know, many times people ask me when I moved out to campus, are you here for the religious Jews? Because you're obviously a rabbi, you're religious. We're here for Jewish people. A Jew is a Jew is a Jew. And as I said, everyone is welcome from all faiths, if ever want to learn about anything.
Now, the Passover season has just been celebrated by Jews around the world. What did you do here?
We actually had a large Passover Seder through our Jewish student group, the Chabad Jewish Student Association, the RSO on campus, that we had a large Seder both nights in the Peabody Private Dining Hall, which we work with Illini Catering Service, where they were a very big help, and they worked with it, making sure we could have a kosher, fully kosher event in Peabody Private Dining Hall, which was really beautiful. A few hundred people were able to have a Passover Seder. And the Seder that we did, we led it in English, interactive stories, and everyone around the table should feel like, you know, it's an open round table discussion.
Were there children?
There were children. There were children, students. We had community members too. And students, they enjoy sometimes seeing children running around the room too.
Sure, miss it. And how, since Passover comes often close to the Christian celebration of Easter, and since Easter is often a difficult time for a Jewish minority in countries where there are strong Christian majorities, do you try to prepare students for some of the anti-Jewish feelings, sentiments that sometimes get expressed, unfortunately, by Christians at that time of year?
I mean, generally, we try to focus on the positive. As I mentioned before, a lot of the students who are, you know, a student who is Jewish doesn't know much about his own Judaism. Mm-hmm. When anti-Semitic things do happen, it makes them wanting to learn more about where they come from. So we try and teach that when someone knows what they are, they're proud of what they are. We're trying not to make if someone tells you this, answer this. So mm-hmm. We're trying to make you proud of who you are, and therefore you'll have more pride. And if, God forbid, you do come to such a situation, you'll have more to say for yourself what you really are. But yes, of course, if people ask me questions how to deal with certain things, and we try to always, you know, in Hebrew there's a word that says "bedarkei noham, bedarkei shalom," with peace. And peace is very important for students and all people around the world. So we try not to make a conflict in a fighting way.
Mm-hmm. And I know that many Jewish students have been involved today. This is the National Day of Interfaith Youth Service, the first one nationally. And I know Jewish students, Muslim students, Christian students, Hindu students on this campus have been doing doing different service projects this afternoon. And I was with some of these, about 70 of these students earlier, and I know many Jewish students were involved. Is that something you encourage?
It's very, very important. We encourage. It's very important for students to realize, for everyone to realize that being involved in your faith doesn't only mean dealing strictly with learning what I have or praying what I have. And a lot of it has to do with social action, helping someone else out. You know, you have to help everybody else. You won't find anywhere written in anywhere in Judaism saying you're only allowed to help a Jewish person, not God forbid. And therefore, such days, it's important when students get to meet other students and they see how we could work together to help someone else out, work together to do someone a favor. A lot of the programs that we actually do has to do with that, you know. We just got here this year, but many of my colleagues at Chabad on campuses nationally, you know, they may be a Jewish holiday, or they'll pack Jewish gift baskets to the soldiers in Iraq, or just pack any food before the holiday season where all faiths together celebrate in December time. So people should learn that social action is very important. Visiting the sick is very important. A lot of the time we spend as a Jewish group here on campus that they visit all sick people, and, you know, we try to help them out and we try to visit them on our own. Mm-hmm. It's very important to visit all sick people. Sick people are in bed, older people. And it's not a Jewish thing per se. It's for everybody. Social action is very important, and we encourage it.
One thing, 5 years ago when I dreamed up the idea for this program on the Radio Weekly, was that so much of the news of students is often just when they get into trouble, when there's a difficulty, when there's a crime, when there's something bad. But just today, for example, here are these 70 students going out to visit nursing homes to talk to people who may not get a visit, may not have had a visitor for weeks or months, to go and work in the food bank, you know, getting food ready for poor people. I mean, students do this, and there'll probably be nothing in the newspaper, probably nothing in the news, but they're out on a Sunday afternoon when they could be studying for their classes tomorrow.
Especially now.
Now they'll have to stay up a little later to do it. But it's very impressive to see
It's so important. And that's where, you know, part of my work, I visit sometimes, you know, we say the forgotten people in the jails or maybe someone, as you mentioned, in the hospital. We try to bring students along year-round because when people see examples, someone else doing it, they would go and do it themselves. And it's really a big pity that these things don't get more attention of how students mm-hmm. are doing good work and social action together, all face together, how we could work together.
Mm-hmm. And the students planned this event today, this National Day of Interfaith Youth Service, planned it themselves,
wow.
you know, went out and found places that could use their help. Organized it, raised the money to buy T-shirts and
tremendous.
The things that students like to do. It's they learn a lot of leadership skills in the process.
Yes, it's very important because you just reminded me of a story I heard many years ago. There was a distant Jewish community in the former Soviet Union that they were losing anything about their heritage, about the hope. So they contacted a rabbi who lives in the Jewish area of Moscow, and they said, "Can you please send someone down to help us out?" So he sent someone. He said, "I don't want you to teach them about their heritage. I want you to teach them how to teach others."
Uh-huh.
So when you leave, they could teach others. And when students on campus, when they do such a thing like today, it's not only teaching them, "Oh, today I went to visit a nursing home," but since they led it, it teaches them leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, 5 years down the line when they leave campus and they're in their own cities, they'll want to do such a program to help people out in their cities.
Who are some people that were influential in your development as a Jewish rabbi? To have that leadership in your community?
The person who ran the Chabad organization, Chabad Meir Rabbi Schneerson, he passed away in 1994. He actually, as we mentioned earlier, Chabad started 250 years ago. Judaism as a whole for many years, you know, was about the people that stayed in the study hall studying, and it was about the people that worked in the farms. About 300 years ago, there was a great rabbi, his name was Rabbi Israel Baal Shem Tov, who he said, "We have to stop this. Everyone should be equal. Everyone should help each other out. The learner should help out the unlearned. The unlearned should help out the learned. Everyone should help each other out," which is what they could do. And that's when he started the Hasidic movement.
Hmm.
People ask, what's a Hasid? A Hasid is, which today is a regular thing, is serving God, helping other people through love, and serving God through love. You know, it used to be, someone was telling me a story there, taught in school that you better do this or this, because imagine someone would stand over your head with a gun, and would you do it? So through, if you're not going to do this, God's going to punish you. And Hasidim try to teach that. Do it because you love God and God loves you. And this is a universal message. We have to love. We have to do things because God loves us. And they also taught that between people, we have to love each other. So when Chabad began 250 years ago, there was always someone who ran the organization, who ran the movement, who talked about it at length. And through the history of 250 years, based on the historical and the history we was holding in the former Soviet Union or anywhere there, they're helping Jewish people out then. And about 100 years ago, Chabad came to the United States as an organization and as a movement helping people out. And in 1940, the previous Chabad Rebbe, as a Rebbe is the one who ran the organization, ran the movement. Rebbe means a teacher. He came to the United States. He escaped the Holocaust.
That was Rabbi Schneerson.
Rabbi Schneerson, mm-hmm. his father-in-law, his name was Rabbi Joseph Isaac Schneerson. He escaped the Holocaust as bombs were falling on Warsaw, and he was actually a big fighter for Jewish causes in the former Soviet Union, and so much so that he was actually imprisoned and had a death sentence against him, and the United States and a few other countries helped him out.
Mm.
So when he came to the United States, he said, "America is no different. We have to be proud of who we are." And his son-in-law, Menachem Schneerson, who started this organization today, of in 1950, when his father-in-law passed away, he started this of people traveling all over to open a center. People should help people, a center where you can learn about your heritage. He gave this inspiration. He inspired a generation of leaders.
And you're one of them.
And uh-huh. that's what we try to aspire uh-huh. to be based on his teachings, uh-huh. being a leader.
We have a caller waiting to speak to our guest today on Keeping the Faith. We're speaking with Rabbi David Teichtel about Jewish meditation, which we will get to eventually, and the movement of Chabad, which is spelled C-H-A-B-A-D, for those interested. Let's go to our caller on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hi, and thanks. Here's my question. I know we have so many choices in life. Our church, for example, sponsors the Crop Walk, or we're part of it. And how do you make these choices? Everything sounds so good. My question is, how do you choose between? And I'd like your guests to comment on that, and I'll hang up and listen to the answer. Thank you.
How do you choose between social programs and learn? If it's a religious thing, I always tend to tell people to study your religion, study what you were brought up or what your family ever had ties to before you go to someone else. First, look what you have in your own backyard. Look what you have available to you before you travel all around the world to look for someone else, what someone else has to offer. There was actually a story told about this there was this villager who lived in a city many hours from Prague, and he had a dream one night. And in his dream, he had a vision that under the great bridge in Prague, there's a big, big treasure hidden over there. He woke up in the morning and he told his wife. His wife told him, "Nah, what are you listening to dreams?" But the next night he had the same dream. After 3 nights, he decided he's going. He packed his bags, he traveled and traveled. He finally reached to the big bridge in Prague, and he saw guards over there. He was figuring, how could I dig for their chest? How could I find it? One time when the guard wasn't looking, he finally pulled out a shovel and he started to dig and dig. And all of a sudden, the guard turned around and said, "What are you doing?" He said, I have to be honest with you. He was like stammering. "I had a dream that there's a treasure over here." The guard said, "Oh, you had a dream that there's a treasure over there. Do you know what? I had a dream. I had a dream in such and such a village." And he names this person's village. "In this person's house, under the oven, there's a chest." The guy said, "Oh, I better run back home. He's working about my house." And sure enough, he went back home and dug under his oven, and he found the chest. Sometimes it takes people to go far to find what's in their backyard. But generally, it's always good to start what's in your own backyard.
Why are there so many good Jewish stories?
There's good stories everywhere. I can tell you what I learned in my Jew. But in social programming, there's so much out there. I mean, there's so much to help. I mean, that's why it's so beautiful of today's program of today, where it's uniting so many different organizations, so many different faiths. Because in social programming, there's so much out there. And you could choose from whatever you feel talks more to your heart in helping someone else out.
Let me give the phone numbers again for other listeners who may want to talk to our guest today, Rabbi David Teichtel. Anywhere the program is heard, you can punch in 1-800-222-9455. That, of course, is a free call. That's 1-800-222-WILL in Champaign-Urbana, where this program originates live every Sunday afternoon from 5 to 6. 333-9455 will get you one of several lines to talk to our guest, 333-WILL. Let me take just a moment, since we're about halfway through our program, to let listeners know who our guest will be coming up in the next few weeks. Next week, Walter Matherly will be talking about poetry. April is Poetry Month, and we try to celebrate that a little bit. On May 9th, Clayton Doffenbaugh will be our guest, talking about creating local democracies. Barbara Jones, librarian, formerly from the University of Illinois, will be our guest on May 16, talking about the issues of censorship in relation to books, a particular specialty of hers. And this is a theme, particularly in Champaign-Urbana, where the book Fahrenheit 451 is being read by many people and talked about in many settings, so we'll be part of that discussion on May 16. Al Sharp will be a guest later in May, who is head of the Protestants for the Common Good. That's a Christian organization out of Chicago for the state of Illinois that tries to counter the politics of the Christian right. So it should be an interesting discussion with Al Sharp. That'll be May 30. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the host for this program usually, although I want to thank Becca Nieto for helping out last week, interviewing students from the group Students Improving the Lives of Animals here on this campus. My wife and I were traveling visiting our grandchildren in Philadelphia, so thanks to Becca for helping out. Becca is the program director at the University Y, where I'm the executive director. The Y is the oldest religious institution active at the university. It was started by students in 1873, and since that time has been providing opportunities for social action, for community service, for students and others to be of aid to others in the community, and, of course, developing student leadership through that process. The Y is a charitable organization, and we survive by the kind gifts of folks, and want to thank people who gave things for our annual auction last Friday night. It was a wonderful event, and we raised some very helpful money for the Y, and people had a good time and got some great bargains. And I want to thank people who donated things and those who came to that auction. The Y also is happy to receive gifts of automobiles, cars, trucks, vans, SUVs, which we then sell to help our budget. And it, in the process, often helps people who donate these vehicles because they don't have to go through the hassle of selling them themselves and or trading them in, and they can get a good tax deduction, of course, if you itemize. If you have questions about, give me a call, Steve Shoemaker at the Y, 337-1500 during the week. Happy to talk with you about that. Coming up at the Y in a couple weeks, the week of May 10, will be our big collection for Dump and Run, where we collect things that students often toss in dumpsters, or people, as they're cleaning out their garages or attics, find they have a bunch of things they don't need anymore or want. We collect those things, and then in the fall, we have a grand sale. And students and others come and get some good things that they like to stock their apartments and dorm rooms with. So this is a grand recycling program that's coming up the week of May 10. People may bring things to the Y, and there'll be also collection boxes around the U of I campus so that students won't just throw things in the dumpsters that they can't fit in their cars. Okay, well, let's get back to, oh, I should say one other thing. Another interfaith issue of the Whirlwind Project ends up this week, Monday, tomorrow night, April 26. There'll be the final concert for the Interfaith Whirlwind Project that's dealing with the theme of meditation in many different religious traditions. And at Salem Baptist Church at 7 o'clock at night, that's tomorrow at Monday, will be a wonderful concert. This will be the third year this has happened there at Salem. People will be there from the Illinois Mosque, from the Central Illinois Youth Orchestra, from Salem Baptist Church choirs. There'll be an interfaith choir. It's a wonderful event. It's free, and you can hear the music from many different religious traditions. That's tomorrow night, Monday, 7 p.m. at Salem Baptist Church in Champaign. The address is 500 East Park. And then the final event for Whirlwind for this semester, it will be May 1st, next Saturday at 4 o'clock at Wesley Foundation on the corner of Green and Goodwin. It'll be a interfaith meditation service where people will hear readings from different religious traditions, have an opportunity to meditate, learn from those traditions, and it finishes up with a grand international food festival, which is really just a huge community potluck. So people will be coming and bringing things to share, foods from different religious traditions, and come and enjoy it. It's free, 4 o'clock, Saturday, May 1st, the Wesley Foundation in Urbana. Now, back to our guest, who's been waiting patiently, Rabbi David Teichtel. He's new to Champaign-Urbana with the organization Chabad, which is spelled C-H-A-B-A-D. You can learn about that national organization by going to www.chabad.org. And locally, you can learn about the Champaign-Urbana Chabad Center by going to chabadcu.org, chabadcu.org. And people can also call you by phone if they don't have access to a computer. 217-384-6362 will reach Rabbi David Teichtel.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, tell us what's happening soon at the Chabad Center. Anything coming up you'd like people to know about?
It's actually for the Chabad Jewish Student Center. We could start with that. As I mentioned before, a lot of our programs are, you know, we had a program last week at Rolling Your Own Sushi, a lot of the social events and fun events. As the students are wrapping up the year, they're almost finished in a couple of weeks. So we have a few programs coming up. We have the Friday night dinners, which happen every Friday night at 8 p.m. in our home. It's you can find the information on our website. It's Urbana. This week is actually Italian Shabbat for students, which the theme is going to be about Italy, and the food's going to be Italian cuisine. We also have, actually, this coming Sunday, we're having a ice cream Sunday, which is an opportunity. We discuss a lot the importance of celebrating a birthday. Mm. And for all the students that are going to be away over the summer, when are we going to celebrate their birthdays? Mm. So this Sunday is an opportunity for all the birthday boys and girls to come out and celebrate their birthday with their friends while eating some ice cream. Hopefully it will be a little hotter than today.
Mm. Getting a little cold. 55 out there right now.
Yeah. But, you know, every day is a little different. We have the challah baking program that happens every Thursday at 4 p.m. at Chabad.
And Tell us what challah is.
Challah is actually an old Jewish custom. At every Friday evening, when they sit down to dinner, they have bread, which is called challah. What challah actually is three braided, or people do six braids. It's braided bread, which many times is
kind of a sweet bread.
Kind of a sweet bread. Which,
but not too sweet.
It depends how you like it.
Yeah.
It's kind of a sweet bread, and it's braided. And there's actually a write-up about it in the Daily Line half a year ago. Mm-hmm. And it gives people the opportunity, if they want to learn what challah is, or if they know what it is and want to bake it. So that happens every Thursday at 4 o'clock.
Now, you had a program last Tuesday about Jewish meditation, and we've advertised that that's one of the things we'll be talking about today, because that is the theme of the Whirlwind Projects, and we tried to schedule some people on this radio program during this last three-month period to talk about meditation from their own religious tradition. What is the Jewish way in meditation?
What is the Jewish way of meditation? Before I get to that, you mentioned about the Whirlwind Project. I wanted to actually mention it was a beautiful project, and I was glad to take part in it, and it was very nice to give a class for it. Jewish meditation, you know, many people ask, is meditation a Jewish thing, or is this something in the past decade or two decades? Mm-hmm. Actually, Jewish meditation dates back to the beginning of Judaism, the beginning of time when the Jews gave it, when God gave the Torah. We know in Judaism there was a lot of prophets. One of the known prophets is Moses. And all the prophets that took place thereafter, which many of them, the books are written. But there were many other prophets that people don't know about. It says, Maimonides writes, there was actually a whole school of prophets. There was a certain time in the history that every single person on the street, prophecy was a commonplace. Maimonides says, you should know any prophet, no matter how he prophesied, what he said or God's will was, he always had to meditate beforehand. He had to think. He had to sing. He had to connect with godliness beforehand. We find actually in the Torah, the first commandment of the Ten Commandments is, I am God, your God. And a person may ask, what type of commandment is I am? What am I supposed to do about that? Moses took care of that later on. He explains, he says, you shall know today that I am God, your God. He says, what's the commandment you shall know? What does it mean, you shall know? You should internalize. Think about it. Think about God. So we see in history, and we could go through many different sources. In history, meditation was around in Judaism and law and Torah law. Was around historically. Was around. But, you know, over the years, when the destruction, the Jews had two temples in Jerusalem many years ago. And the destruction of the second temple, the rabbis got very concerned. The leaders of the community got very concerned that, you know, meditation, it's... people could take it to foreign countries. Now it's all in Israel. It's near the Holy Land, and people have their teachers nearby. But after the destruction of the Second Temple by the Roman Empire, when people were exiled to Babylonia, which is today Iraq, they were scared where people might come to, what traditions they might fall into. So they said, you know, let us keep this spiritual meditation to the spiritual people that really know what they are doing. And that's what happened. So there's a whole generation of these early mystics that meditated, and they had these deep thoughts, and they had these esoteric teachings, which actually came to be written in the book called the Zohar, which is Kabbalah, which is this, all these esoteric teachings, which an average person can just open up and study. And, you know, then meditation is also just thinking about God. So what happened all the years, you know, forget about the esoteric teachings, but just taking a moment, if every person would take 5 minutes to think about godliness, think about, they say, over the past few hundred years, through all the upheavals, and also the focus that people have in life, it used to be people used to look up at the leaders, at the philosophers, people who took their time to think. You know, as we see in the Fiddler on the Roof was just played on campus. What does Tevye say? If he was a rich man, I'll be sitting at the Eastern Wall and be studying all day. People used to focus on how to get closer to God and how to think about God. And with the things changing over, people started to focus more on how to make more money, how to have extra business. And a lot of that was lost. And all the wars, a lot of that was lost. That's about a little while ago, about 200 years ago, at the same time when all these things were happening, there was a rabbi named Rabbi Shneur Zalman who said, we have to reintroduce these things of thinking about godliness. And he said, what is Jewish meditation? The specialty of Jewish meditation is not just taking yourself and making yourself spiritual for a few moments. It's taking that spiritual high and connecting it into something practical. Don't just do something that makes you feel good for a few minutes. Do something that can make you feel good for a few minutes, but afterwards will teach you how you're connected to God. What does God want you to do? He wants you to help out your fellow person. Mm. Visit the sick. Increase in prayer and doing good deeds. And that's one of the fundamental things of Jewish meditation. Helping, taking the spiritual high and connecting it to practical use.
I want to get back in a minute to that tie to ethics that's so important in Judaism. even in Jewish, as you mentioned, even in Jewish meditation. But before I do that, let me just ask, are there professionals within Judaism who meditate, like there is in the Christian tradition with the tradition of monks and monasteries and people who believe in just a life of prayer, of life of meditation, a life of thinking about God, and maybe will choose to be silent for all their life?
Right.
Is there that tradition at all in Judaism, or is that something just...
There are those that are more the teachers of meditation, but that's one of the things of Jewish meditation. It's not something that it should be left for a few spiritual people mm-hmm. who are in their room practicing it. Meditation, anybody could do it. And if you want to take Jewish meditation, you could discuss two techniques. There's one of just mindfulness. When we do something...
Say that word again.
Mindfulness.
Mindfulness.
When you're
helping,
when you're doing something, when I'm going to work today, thinking, why am I working to make money?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I making money so I could be able to support my wife and kids? We should have food on the table. Why are we here? Why do you want to have food on the table? To be stronger, to serve God, to help make a better place in this world. Whatever you're doing, just think of a purpose, a reason behind it. That in itself could be a basic meditation. Of course, there's much deeper meditations, and as you know, there's another step of meditation, you know, just walking down the street and seeing how nature and seeing how things are changing over and seeing how this world is a perfect world. Mm-hmm. And thinking, if this world is perfect, the person who's running the world must be perfect too. And then there's even more, that when we pray, we don't just say words. We think about the words. We think what's behind the words. We think of, why am I created in this world to make this world a better place? Think of a mission. And that's basically anybody could practice that. Anyone could think of that. Just thinking, what am I? Why am I here? What am I doing? Why am I doing it? Of course, you could go a lot deeper. There are hundreds and hundreds of books that discuss all these different meditative thoughts. But basically, Jewish meditation wants you to know that you can meditate while you're driving in the car to work. You just think of a spirituality.
So you can choose to think about positive things. You can choose to think about God. You can choose to think about purpose in life and your work and your family and so on. But what about all the things you don't want to think about in this world? The war, the evil, the violence, the antagonism, the prejudice. How does a Jewish rabbi respond to those things?
To all the things that are happening in the world today?
Some of the evil things. The wicked things.
You know, sometimes many times people look for answers at everything that's happening, but sometimes some things we can answer, some things we don't have answers for. Some things, you know, God, after all, we're human and God is God. If we would know everything that God knows, we'll be God. There's some things we can't answer. Unfortunately, the things that are happening today all over the world, these immoral things or different unfortunate wars and things, it all comes from... But I believe it all comes from what we learn, teaches us. It all comes from people not valuing life, not valuing what we're really here for. I mean, if a person would really think what his purpose is here, why is he here to help someone else out, or think of how could I make this world a better place, you know, about in the early 1990s, their CNN broadcasting came over to Rabbi Schneerson and asked him, what's your message to the world? You know, he was a big leader and he spoke a lot. And said, what would be your message if you could? And he said, my message is, add an act of goodness and kindness to make this world a better place. You know, if each one of us will just think so, Maimonides writes, if every person will think that the world is an equal scale of good and bad, and my good deed could tip the scale, the world would be a lot different. Unfortunately, people don't have these things. That's why meditation is so important. If people would think into this, and this basic meditative thought, a lot of the problems in the world today, I believe, won't happen.
But how do you make that jump from the meditation that many people do in many religious traditions, to avoiding the temptations to hurt somebody else, to be totally selfish, to only think about myself, to, you know, all the various evils that we're all tempted to do.
Right, you know, when someone's...
How do you avoid them?
How do you avoid them? You know, when someone, you know, they say there's two things. There are things that you could, there are things that you can't. Then there are things that you could, but you shouldn't. How do you avoid them? How does a person, when a person thinks that, you know, if a person has no sense of higher authority, has no sense that there's anything else in this world or any other purpose, yes, walk down the street, I'd like to do this, I'd like to do that, I'd like to kill. Why not? There's no sense of purpose, there's no sense of life, there's no sense of importance. I don't see a value of life, I don't see a value of my own life. But if a person starts thinking, you know, why am I here to help other people out? Why am I, you know, if I'm going to do that non-good thing, what is that going to help me down the road? It's not a day-by-day living. It's looking at the future. It's looking at a longer purpose, of a focus of other things. It's giving yourself a meaning, as you know, someone mentioned me once, good meditation makes good people. Mm. Meditation is a very broad used word. People think of meditation, they think, you know. I'm right now using the meditation at a basic level of just for each person on their own. It's a thought that anyone could do from any faith. Just thinking, you know, when you're faced with a challenge, is the good going to help me out or the bad going to help me out? In the long run, if I have to run this 500 meter, if I'm going to drop my shoes off today, is it going to help me with my run or is it going to make it worse? You know, mm-hmm. Every little thing we think of the long-term effect, think of the purpose, and it could help out a lot. And people could try it on their own. You try thinking. The next time they're faced with something, you know, it says God created this world, good and bad. A person may ask, if God doesn't want us to do bad, why did he make a world of good and bad? Mm-hmm. Because God wants to give us the opportunity to make choice, to get rewards for the good and punishment for the bad. It's in our hands. We are the ones that could make that decision. But we know that when we make the right decision, we are rewarded. And if God forbid the opposite, what it could lead to.
How do you actually teach people to meditate within the Jewish tradition? Are there rituals involved? Excuse my Christian reference, but for example, within monasteries, monks would recite the Psalms as you know from the Jewish Bible as a way to focus their prayer. Is this something Jews do?
Yeah, the meditation I was referring to is more of a basic level, what you could do driving in your car. But yes, in meditation, which we spoke about a lot at the class last week, is meditation within, let's say, within prayer or within studying. Think about a deeper, you know. Take this. Learn something that really means something to you a lot. Learn something that discusses how great God is or how great the world that he created is. And if that talks to you a lot, think about that. When you pray, think about that. When you're in prayer, mention the word God. Think of that thought that you once had. Think of that, you know, people have their mantras in the world they refer to. But think about something that talks most to your heart. And that's why there's so many books out there today. If people want to study, that's what the Hasidic text teaches. If you want to study more about what God means, what the world means, what does life mean, yes, there are teachings that you should study and you could study, and it's available to study. And that is the main form of meditation. It's called hitbonenut, which is contemplation, contemplating into things that you are doing. And to help you contemplate, there's a lot of books of teachings.
We're down to about our last 10 minutes here on this live program, Keeping the Faith on WILL. Our guest is Rabbi Dovid Teichtel, who helped establish the Chabad Center here at the University of Illinois just last summer. If you have questions, please give us a call. The number in Champaign-Urbana is 333-9455. Elsewhere, you may call us absolutely free by punching in 1-800-222-9455, and that includes people who are hearing this program on the Internet at WILL.UIUC.EDU, and then going to AM 580. We're happy to have your calls, comments, or questions. When we talk about meditation in the Jewish tradition, why should people do it? What do they get out of it? What's the benefit? Does it enrich their lives in any way? Would it help just to as much to think about an orange as to think about God?
That is the focal point of Jewish meditation, that it should make a change by you. When you finish meditating, if a person meditates for self, spiritual, high, when he finishes meditating, who feels different? He might have felt different. When a person meditates in order to change himself in the end run, people around him will feel different. The main reason for Jewish meditation, the focal point of Jewish meditation, is to give you more meaning in life. Many times, you know, today, post-September 11th world, people are looking for more religion. I counter it a lot wherever in my travels. People are looking for more religion, looking for more understanding. When people see there's a larger picture, people see there's a reason why he's here. People see that there's a creator. Just like the trees changed over in spring, this tree changed over on this day, that tree and that tree. There must be a reason for it. There must be someone who's behind it. And if this great God who's behind the trees. Imagine walking down the street and take a big city in Chicago and you have a special connection to the traffic controller and he decides that he's going to make every stop, every crosswalk walk for you. He's going to, he wants, he can right now make everything well, and you could walk. And if you know that that guy is taking care of you, you'll have a lot quicker walk. So too, when you think about God, that he, there might be 6 billion of us in this world, but each one of us, he's taking care of each one of us individually, each one of us personally. When a person knows that, that can make a very big difference in their lives. When people are going, you know, the way it is in the world, and people come through hardships, that's when they start remembering about God. And it makes a different perspective when you come to, it gives you a different way to approach hardship. It gives you a different way to approach anything that happens in the world. Why is it happening to me? Why? There's a master plan over here. And if people take time, take 5 minutes of the day in today's world, which is very hard with all the internet, cell phones, beepers, radio, just take a few minutes. Just say, you know, when I wake up in the morning, I'm going to think God was kind to give me back my life. You know, when we sleep, who knows if I'll wake up the next morning. If I would think in the morning that God was nice that he gave me back my soul this morning, God was nice that he let me live another day, throughout the day when you're challenged with something, you'll think, hey, let me show God it was worth it. I want him to realize it was worth it. I want him to realize that tomorrow morning it's worth it again. Not to think in the negative term, but think in the positive, that I want to show God that it was worth it to give me my soul back for another day.
But Rabbi, how can this be? How can you think that God cares about each person when just last week there was a tornado that wiped out half of the town of Utica just up the road? I mean, where was God in those kind of tragedies?
You know, there are many books written on this topic, and it's not a something that could be answered on one foot, you know, just quickly. But, you know, many times God wants to see how we withstand, to believe in God when things are easy, to love someone when the person's all kind to you is not the biggest test of love. When's the biggest test of love? When things are hard. Sometimes, I mean, I'm not here to answer. I can't answer a family that lost a loved one. But many times we see throughout the history that God made different tests and wants to see how we can withstand those tests. How can we withstand it? Is it only because, is the reason why we love God only because life is easy? You know, with the story of Job, where the whirlwind project actually discussed last year, when everything was perfect for him, the angel said, the reason why everything is so perfect is because everything is great for him in life. Take away things, he won't be that way. And when the story goes, God took everything away from him and he still believed in God. Sometimes there are hardships to give us a little away, to remind us and for us to withstand it all. But you know, on some things, we have, as I mentioned earlier, we don't have answers for. Mm-hmm. Some things God does, but we don't know. That's why we say God knows.
What does that mysterious line in one of the Psalms from the Jewish Bible mean? Be still and know that I am God. What is there about stillness that's connected to somehow knowing God?
Stillness and knowing God. Sometimes, if I understand correctly what you're referring to, we spoke before, let's take knowing God first. Knowing God, the commandment of know thy God. What does it mean, know God? I am God, your God. Know him, internalize, think about it for long enough that you'll know it. As one of the famous Jewish prayers, which was said many times in the lips of someone who's about to be killed and self-sacrifice, the sanctification of God's name, he would say, hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one.
The Shema.
The Shema, yeah. The Shema Yisrael. What's the Shema? What does it mean, hear, O Israel? Why is he using such a term of listening? Because we know listening is internalizing, bringing it into you. Therefore, if you look through our Psalms, many times it uses these terms that may be still, may be serenity, disconnecting from the world that you're in and think about God, internalizing what God is. And in Psalms, you will see many different terms in that vein.
The Psalms being part of what scholars would say is wisdom literature, the collection of wisdom from many different sources. And of course, the Psalms are looked at as scripture by not only Jews, but also right. Christians and Muslims. Here's this wealth of collection of knowledge, spiritual knowledge. You've talked about how important knowing is to Judaism and how it has to be tied to something practical. How do you right. do that? How do you tie what you read in the Torah or in the Psalms to your life today? I mean, it was written 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, 4,000 years ago, who knows how long ago. How can it be contemporary?
When you take anything you learn in the Torah, you know, every week is a different Torah portion, different things that we study and discuss and we read about. It says the word Torah is not a history book. Torah is something we have to learn from it. So every week we have to find things that we can learn from. Maybe a law, practical laws, and like in this week's Torah portion, we're going to read in the service this Friday, this Shabbat afternoon. What does it talk about? It talks about laws about don't steal, don't kill. That's practically how we could use it. But then there are laws, then there are things that we could learn about, a very high, unique thing. We could learn about how God speaks about in front of a blind person, don't put a stumbling block. And how can I connect something of yesteryear to today? How many of us are meeting blind people every day? It means no. In front of a friend of yours that doesn't know something, don't give them false advice. Or many of the laws that are spoken about in the Torah, about the Holy Temple, which is not even around today, each one of us teaches us a different thing. There was these different incense they used to bring up as sacrifice to burn to God. And it says that they used to use some of the incense they used to use with terrible foul smell. Why are we learning it about today? Because what was the burning of foul smell teaching us? Each one of us have our negative within us, so to speak, our side that pulls more to the negative. Burn that, get rid of it, don't hold that. I mean, you could go through thing by thing, or if you take a meditative thought, by a person thinking of the greatness of God and how God cares about him, and how God uniquely, I am, even though there are 6 billion, I am one. As when God created Adam, he was created one. Why one? To show that every person can make a difference. Here you're taking a thought how God, he might be so great, but on the same hand, he cares about me personally. He's going to make every stop sign, he's going to make every crosswalk walk. So if he cares about me so much, let me care about my fellow person so much. And if each one of us take just that one thought and try to practice it and try to care about another person. Today's National Day of Interfaith Youth Services will be an everyday program, everyday things that people should do. So it shouldn't only be brought into a few hours, it should be brought into our entire lifetime.
We've run out of time, but what you've just said is a very appropriate place to close. We've been talking on Keeping the Faith today with Rabbi David Teichtel about Jewish meditation and about the Jewish tradition of Chabad, which is spelled C-H-A-B-A-D. If you'd like more information about that, the Chabad Center in Champaign-Urbana can be reached by phone at 217-384-6362, and on the internet, you can check out their website at www.chabadcu.org. That's C-H-A-B-A-D, the letters C-U for Champaign-Urbana.org. And I want to thank Rabbi Teichtel for being with us today and for our caller today. We have other guests coming up next week on Keeping the Faith. Walter Matherly will be talking about poetry. And on May 9th, Clayton Doffenbaugh will be talking to us by phone from Chicago about creating local democracy. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs each Sunday night here on WILL. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
There are about 675 species of native birds in North America. To win the most demanding and prestigious birdwatching competition in the country, you have to see all of them, and then some. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, die-hard birders compete in the big year. Also, we'll get the dirt on the gardener's best friend, the worm. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Human Kinetics Publishers Incorporated, Champaign; Devro TPAC, Danville; and Illinois Graphics Incorporated, Bloomington. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly cloudy in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy. The low in the lower 40s with west winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a high in the lower 60s and west winds 5 to 10 miles per hour in the morning, increasing to 10 to 20 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s and northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. This is WILL Urbana, listener-supported public radio. It's 6 p.m. Central Time. This American Life is next.